The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises or the underwriters of this station. Welcome to KKRN Radio and Off the Shelf with Mary. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Mitchell. I'll be sharing some of my favorite old and new nonfiction books about philosophy, spiritual psychology, science, metaphysics. These things might offer just the knowledge you've been looking for to enhance your life. The two books I'm highlighting today focus on the power of our mind. The first one is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, originally published in 1937. And the second is hot off the press this year, and the title is Think Again, The Power of Knowing What You Don't Know by Adam Grant. Napoleon Hill was born in 1883 in a one-room log cabin in the Blue Ridge Mountains. As a teen, he worked as a newspaper reporter. His outstanding reporting skills led him to a job at a magazine company whose owner, Robert Taylor, was also the governor of Tennessee. Well, Taylor hired Hill when he was only 25 years old and commissioned him to do a job assignment that would take years. The job was to interview 504 of the nation's most successful men in order to find a success formula that would work for the average person. I'm sure you'll recognize the names of many of the famous people that Hill interviewed, such as Dale Carnegie, Mr. Ford, Eastman, Rockefeller, Edison, Woolworth, Morgan, Firestone, as well as three U.S. presidents. He combined what he learned into a philosophy of individual achievement, which he published in 1928, and that later became the book Think and Grow Rich. The book contains the secret best described by Dale Carnegie. This formula has been put to the test by thousands of people in almost every walk of life. It works for all who are ready for it, provided you know what you want. And for everything we achieve, it has its beginning with an idea. Something must be recognized in mind before using the 13 steps in this process to bring an idea for making money into our life. The first is, it's important to understand that the thoughts in our mind are energy. And I'm sure that one time or another, you walked into a group of strangers, and just by their energy, you felt a vibe and you already knew who might be open to talking and who you would rather stay clear of. This is the energy Hill found out about, that our dominant thoughts act like magnets and repel or attract things of like energy, things that we're focused on. With enough repetition and focused attention, our desire moves from our conscious mind and settles into our subconscious mind, which is the creative center in our life. Today, this is known as the law of cause and effect, for every effect must have a cause. It's also known as karma. What we spend our energy on comes back to us in some natural way. Or as Jesus said, it's done unto you as you believe. To become rich, we must become more conscious of our desire for money. And like Henry Ford once said, whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. Isn't that a burning desire? It has to be a burning desire. Yes, the desire is the first step in this 13-step process. Number two is faith. Faith and love are very powerful emotions that give our thought its vitality, its life. Faith is the basis of all miracles and all mysteries that can't be analyzed by the rules of science. Hill believed that faith is the only known antidote to failure. So we begin with our deepest desire, focus on it, repeat it, write it down in a statement of our major goal. The vibrations of the sound of just repeating our goal statement helps the energy to settle into our subconscious mind. And we have faith that the creative process is bringing it all together naturally. This requires us to be persistent in repeating our goal statement. It's recommended that we do this for about 30 minutes every day. Say it, see it, feel it as if it's already so. Perhaps you've heard this verse, if you think you're beaten, you are. If you think you dare not, you don't. If you like to win, but you think you can't, it's almost certain you won't. If you think you'll lose, you're lost. For out in the world we find, success begins with a fellow's will. It's all in a state of mind. If you think you're outclassed, you are. You've got to think high to rise. You've got to be sure of yourself before you can ever win a prize. Life's battles don't always go to the stronger or faster man, but sooner or later, the man who wins is the man who thinks he can. Now, I hope you don't take offense at the male focus in this book, but recognize the decade in which it was written. He reminds us that men like Lincoln and Gandhi have shown us how thoughts carry magnetism that attracts related thoughts and can result in millions of minds working together as one. Step number 3 is autosuggestion or self-suggestion, where we voluntarily feed our subconscious mind with words that carry and clarify our belief. It transmits our emotions to how it feels in the present moment to have accomplished our goal. For example, if money is your goal, see yourself rendering the service or the merchandise that you intend to give in return for this money. Let your emotions help you see and feel the money that's exchanged for a product or a service as you receive it. Step number 4 is knowledge. Hill describes 2 kinds of knowledge. One is general and the other is specialized. He believed that general knowledge is of little use in the accumulation of money. Many people teach knowledge but don't specialize on the organization or the use of knowledge. Knowledge itself won't attract money unless it's organized and directed through a plan of action. He was very specific on this. Knowledge is potential power, and it becomes power when it's organized into a definite plan of action and implemented. An example of this is during the First World War. A Chicago newspaper published an editorial in which they called Henry Ford an ignorant pacifist because he was totally focused on manufacturing automobiles. Mr. Ford brought a libel suit against the newspaper. When the suit went to court, the attorney for the newspaper asked Mr. Ford a variety of questions, intending to show that he was ignorant. Such as, how many soldiers did the British send over to America to put down the rebellion of 1776? I don't know that either. Mr. Ford replied, I do not know the exact number of soldiers the British sent over, but I have heard that it was a considerably larger number than the number that went back. Finally, Mr. Ford was so tired of these questions, he pointed his finger at the lawyer and he said, if I should really want to answer the foolish questions you've just asked, let me remind you that I have a row of electric push buttons on my desk, and by pushing the right button, I can summon to my aid men who can answer any questions I desire to ask concerning the business to which I am devoting my efforts. Everyone in the courtroom recognized Mr. Ford as an educated person, of course, who knows where to get the knowledge when he needs it and how to organize it into a definite plan of action. That's the key to success. To create a plan that will be successful, it's important to get accurate information from dependable sources of knowledge. And what Hill found in his research was that successful people never stop acquiring specialized knowledge relating to their purpose, their business, or their profession. There are so many delightful stories in this chapter that show how knowledge paves the road to riches when you know what road to take. Step number 5 is imagination. You know, remember, this book was written in the early 1900s, and at that time, humanity had discovered and harnessed more of nature's forces than during the previous 50 years, than during the entire history of the human race. Airplanes, railroads, automobiles were invented, as well as assembly lines for production. Obviously, there was a strong desire for things, and I think once the Wright brothers figured out how to build an airplane and fly it, anyone who had any imagination just went crazy with ideas. One interesting story is in the 1880s, Asa Candler owned a retail drugstore and became a successful manufacturer of patent medicines. He bought the rights to a tonic and headache remedy called Coca-Cola. He came up with some unique advertising and marketed this as a soft drink. It boosted his soda fountain sales so much and became wildly popular. He sold his drugstore to focus his energy on manufacturing and marketing Coca-Cola. And now you know the rest of the story. Step number 6 is organized planning. You've got your deep desire, you've used your imagination, and now it's time to get an organized plan down on paper and move it forward. Hill recommends that if our desire is to create a certain product, we should brainstorm the particulars with others who also have a desire to make money. He called this a mastermind group, and to this day it's still very popular as a way to develop an idea into a real product by bringing in others, working towards a definite goal. Hill noted that a spirit of harmony in the group is critical because no one has sufficient experience, education, ability, or knowledge to create a product that brings in a great fortune without the cooperation of other people. But if the first plan doesn't work, replace it with another until you find a plan that does. I think you'll like what's in the second book today when it addresses this point. A plan has to be practical and workable. If it doesn't work, there's something wrong with the plan. You know, Henry Ford met with temporary defeat at the beginning of his automobile career, but as he almost reached the pinnacle of his career, he had more difficulties. But in both endeavors, he created a new plan and went marching forward to financial victory. Hill's research showed him the qualities of what it takes to be a leader in the field of your choice. Here are some. It takes unwavering courage, self-control, a keen sense of justice, being definite in decisions, working the plan, putting more effort into the project than those around you do, having a pleasant personality, respect for others, being a master of detail, have a willingness to assume full responsibility. And wasn't that a good point in the books I reviewed last week on effective leadership? In Hill's research of interviewing successful people, he also found what does not work if you truly want to be outrageously successful. And in this chapter, he goes over 31 ways to fail. Here's just a few. The inability to organize and master the details. An unwillingness to be humble. A lack of self-discipline. A fear of competition. A lack of imagination. Selfishness. And more. He also created a list of 28 questions you should ask yourself at the end of every year to see if you're moving ahead or if you're standing still, if you're going backwards on your plan. And it includes questions such as, have I delivered the best possible quality and service? Is there any place where I let procrastination seep in? So I hope you can see how invaluable this book is for anyone wanting to be highly successful in business. And steps 7 through 15 are really good for anyone accumulating a lot of money, such as the power of decision, working with other minds who are tuned into yours, and paying attention to your intuition. He ends the book with what he calls 6 ghosts of fear, the what-if questions that we scare ourselves with. You can read those and kind of laugh and hope those don't happen to you. But be ready to think and grow rich. Are you ready? I give you permission to begin today. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and a team of volunteers who keep everything organized and running, as well as the many programmers who spend hours each week to produce something for your listening pleasure. You're invited to support this amazing team by sending a donation to KKRN, P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, 96065. Or look for the donate button on the website. We also love donations of cars, trucks, boats, or motorcycles through careasy.org. And if you have questions, give us a call, 1-530-337-1101. The second book today is Think Again by Adam Grant. When someone recommended this book to me, my first question is, who is Adam Grant? Well, he's a professor of organizational psychology at Wharton School of Business. He's an expert on opening up other people's minds as well as our own. One of his guiding principles as a professor is to argue with you like he's right, but he listens to you like he's wrong. I think that's really clever. I enjoyed his statement that if knowledge is power, knowing what we don't know is wisdom. On the cover is a statement by Bill and Melinda Gates. This book is a must read. Now that's quite an endorsement. The first section of the book is on opening our own minds using many examples of famous people around the world. Sounds a lot like Napoleon Hill's book we reviewed that was published 100 years ago. The second section examines how we can encourage people like the armchair quarterbacks who constantly criticize every play. We encourage them to think again. The third section is about how to bring together groups and communities of lifelong learners, because thinking again can help generate new solutions to old problems and revisit old solutions to new problems. It's a way to learn from the people around us, and we end up living with fewer regrets. Grant says the hallmark of wisdom is knowing when it's time to abandon some of our most treasured tools, those cherished parts of our identity. The first example he presents about thinking again is the story of Mike Lazaridis, Lazaridis, who at an early age was something of an electronics wizard. At age 4, he built a record player out of Legos and rubber bands. In college, he dropped out before finishing his engineering degree, and his first invention was a device for reading barcodes on movie film, and that won him an Emmy and an Oscar for technical achievement from the Hollywood crowd. His next and major invention was a wireless communication device for sending and receiving emails. It was the BlackBerry, and Bill Gates was one of his loyal customers. In 2009, the BlackBerry had nearly half the smartphone market, but by 2014, it plummeted to less than 1%. Why? The BlackBerry failed to adapt. Information technology had been increasing at an amazing rate. For instance, in 2011, we consumed about 5 times as much information every day as you would have received 25 years ago. That's huge. In 1950, it took about 50 years of knowledge in medicine to double. But by 1980, it doubled every 7 years. And by 2010, half that time. It made me think about how fast the COVID vaccines were created. The acceleration of change means we need to question everything faster than before. Grant and a colleague of his recognized something they felt was very peculiar. As we think and talk, we often slip into the mindsets of 3 different professions. We can be preachers, prosecutors, or politicians. We get into preacher mode to deliver sermons to protect and promote our ideas. We enter the prosecutor mode when we see the flaws in someone else's work, and we want to argue how wrong they are and why we're right. Or we can find ourselves turning into a politician by campaigning and lobbying for approval. When we're in any one of these mindsets, we're not rethinking our own views. Grant explains the value scientists play in the world because they're always rethinking what they believe. They run experiments, they try out hypotheses, and when he recognized that anyone starting a new business would really benefit from thinking like a scientist, it would pivot their business model more than twice as often and not as one who doesn't think like a scientist. Some scientists morph into preachers when they present their pet theories as gospel and treat thoughtful critique as sacrilege. They veer into a politician when they allow their views to be swayed by popularity rather than accuracy. And they can enter prosecutor mode when they're bent on debunking and discrediting someone else rather than discovering a new way. Grant cautions that no matter how smart we are, if we lack the motivation to change our mind, we'll miss many opportunities to think again. He names 2 biases that can show up. One is a confirmation bias, seeing what we expect to see. The other is desirability bias, seeing what we want to see. Either one can make it hard to see the truth and make it easier to preach our faith more deeply or prosecute our case more passionately and ride the tidal wave of a political opinion. Any one of these can hide the flaws in our thinking and make it harder to see our limitations. So instead, it's important when working with others to improve our product or service, and that way we lead with questions. We teach from our evidence. We're actively open-minded. It requires searching for reasons why we might be wrong, not for the reasons why we might be right, and then revising our views based on what we learn. After all, the purpose of learning isn't to affirm our beliefs, it's to evolve our beliefs. In studying the process of rethinking, Grant found that it unfolds in a cycle that begins with intellectual humility, knowing what we don't know. And that list can be quite long. Next, recognizing our shortcomings, because it opens the door to doubt as we wonder, what information are we missing? That search leads to new discoveries, which in turn maintains our humility by reinforcing how much we still have to learn. Isn't that true? That, in essence, is the rethinking cycle. He compares this to the overconfidence cycle that begins with pride. We have so much confidence that we've already found the best answer. Well, this breeds conviction, but it should breed some doubt. It turns us into prosecutors, focused on changing everybody else's mind. Confirmation bias and desirability bias both ignore or dismiss what other people think. In the case of the BlackBerry, Mike got caught in the overconfidence cycle. His invention was highly successful, and all who used it loved it. But soon, genius Steve Jobs and his iPhone came along and took over the whole market practically. I especially like the chapter in the third section of this book called Charged Conversations, Depolarizing Our Divided Discussions. On Columbia University's campus, there's a laboratory called Difficult Conversations. I wonder what that would look like on the door. Would I walk in that door? If you're brave enough to visit, you'll be matched up with a stranger who strongly disagrees with your views on some controversial topic. You'd be given 20 minutes to discuss this black and white issue, and then you'd be asked to decide between the two of you whether your views have aligned enough to write and sign a joint statement about the subject. Now, that subject could be anything like abortion, guns, or climate change. The mission of the professor who leads this laboratory is to experiment with recipes to make conversations on charged issues more successful. Before the conversation begins, the professor gives the two volunteers a news article about another divisive issue that includes different versions of the issue, showing a balanced cause for both sides. And then there's a chance for reaching consensus on at least part of their views. The experiment showed that after reading a both sides article, 46% of the pair's volunteers were able to find enough common ground to draft and sign a statement together. Other pairs of volunteers are given another version of the same article that, instead of treating it as black and white, frame the debate as a complex problem with many shades of gray. This led the teams to 100% generating and signing a joint statement about the issue. The conclusion is it's not enough to just see the options of others on a complicated issue, even on social media. Well, where that doesn't necessarily change our minds or motivate us to even rethink our position. But presenting two extremes isn't a solution. It polarizes us. Science calls this binary bias, when we are presented with only two sides to an issue. The antidote to this is to showcase the complexity of the issue, which gives us more humility about our knowledge and doubt about our opinions. Perhaps then we're curious enough to look for information we're lacking. It's been shown that when people read a binary version, black and white, they more strongly defend their own perspective. But in reading a complex version of the same issue, more questions are asked, and it generates more high-quality position statements, and both parties feel more satisfied in the end. One of the practices Grant lightly introduces in a business practice is called motivational interviewing. It's used by therapists not to motivate someone to change, but as a process to help the client find their own motivation to change, to break out of a sense of overconfidence and see new possibilities, to activate a rethinking cycle. This is very helpful for people with any addiction. You know, I looked it up on the internet because it didn't give me enough in the book, and here's some basic information. If a friend has a problem, out of our own curiosity, we could be motivated to ask questions to better understand why they don't want to change what they're doing. And we can help them see the problem from various viewpoints, not your own. First, express and demonstrate empathy with their situation. And from there, open a discussion and examining various viewpoints about the problem and help them see healthy or proactive reasons for possibly changing their behavior. Share what we know about their current or previous strengths in handling other problems. It reminds them that they've already had the courage in the past to make a positive change. And then recognize that they are ultimately responsible for changing their behavior. In writing the epilogue of this book, Grant shares that when it comes to rethinking our own views, the weight of evidence favors the scientific mode. But it's less clear-cut when it comes to opening other people's minds. He reflected on a time in 1932, during the height of the Great Depression. The governor of New York, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, gave a speech known as the Try Something speech. He said, "The country demands bold, persistent experimentation. It's common sense to take a method and try it, but if it fails, frankly admit it and try another." FDR wasn't preaching, prosecuting, or appealing to politics. He spoke with a kind of confident humility that you would expect of a scientist. But above all, he stressed the importance of trying something. Although economists are still debating which of FDR's reforms were successful, pulling the country out of that depression, but his trial and error method of formulating policy was so popular, he was elected president 4 times. So when people lack knowledge about a complex topic, like how to stop a pandemic, they might be comfortable with leaders admitting what they don't know or doubt the statements they made yesterday. But when people feel more informed and the problem is simpler, they might dismiss leaders who acknowledge uncertainty or call them flip-floppers. But complex problems like pandemics, climate change, political polarization, call on us to stay mentally flexible. Humility, doubt, and curiosity are vital to the discovery of solutions that come with persistent rethinking. You know, thank you, Adam Grant, for offering such great insight into how important it is to think again. Embrace the joy of being wrong. Find common ground somewhere in difficult discussions. And be able to let go of views that no longer serve us. As you wrote, "For if knowledge is power, knowing what we don't know is wisdom." So use these proven ideas from both books for good in your life and the lives of everyone you love. And for those you don't love, use it for their good anyway. It's another small step in bringing peace to the world. The music for this show is from an acoustical guitar CD by Lemming Shepherds, and it even comes with a full color booklet on their adventures. I want to thank you for listening to Off the Shelf with Mary and your support for KKRN. This is an amazing educational community radio station. So until next week, may peace be with you.